What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast. We are back with episode 104 with Dr. Thomas O'Brien. He is presenting on the role of the team dentist. He is the team dentist for the Houston Texans, the Rockets, the Dynamo, Houston Baptist University, University of Houston, and the WWE in Houston. All right, so he does a lot of high-profile dental work, and he talks to us today about the role of the team dentist and how you can go about getting one and some of the people to contact and, you know, things that he's done to maintain that job, some stuff to do in dental emergencies. I am, of course, in the interview part joined by Dr. Josh Yellen and Jasmine Dozal is over there running the executive producer part. So, again, want to thank Bob Marley, Memorial Hermann staff there for allowing us to come out to record these sessions, to interview all these great speakers all at one time, and to bring you this great content throughout the course of the year. And one last thing is we are now have a email list. So we're going to be releasing some exclusive content on that email list. So if you're not on there, you won't be able to get that. So you can sign up there on the sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. So again, on the sportsmedicinebroadcast.com, you can sign up for that content. But without much further ado, thanks for listening to Dr. Thomas O'Brien.
Howard, if you're in the role of the trainer, I'm not going to get into this. We'll pick you back at the office after y'all give it to me. Don't have time to do that today. If you haven't talked to anybody about it at any time, call my office and my prepare or whatever. We have to get into that with you. But I'm here basically to talk about the on the field treatment and the locker room treatment by you guys. It's so critical to discuss that we have later or today. There's been a lot of advances made in the dental team itself, but on the field or in the locker room treatment, there has been a lot of real post-terror advances made in the treatment. I'm going to be reviewing them today, basically what we have at this point. Also, we'll be able to review, but, you know, I found that reviewing things from time to time that you don't use on a daily basis, good idea to stick to our or whatever. So, bear with me if you would, for those of you who have heard this before. I'll try to make an objection that means pretty properly that. It's got my basic phone number, office address, that type of thing, email, so get in touch with me if you have any questions about anything.
Point this way.
Here. Oh, okay.
Well,
okay, so basically, the trauma review, we're going to talk about the types of injuries. You've got the soft tissue injuries, you've got the hard tissue injuries, you've got the CLA injuries. Those are the three basic types. Soft tissue, you have lacerations and hematomas. Hard tissue, you have tooth fracture, revulsion, luxation, subluxation, jaw, and jaw fracture. And of course, you have TMJ. It's a couple of TMJ, soft tissue lacerations. Well, that's, in addition to the soft tissue lacerations, you'll notice luxation of a couple of teeth, possibly even jaw fracture in the one picture on the right. Okay. So more often than not, you don't just have a soft tissue injury or just have a hard tissue injury. You have trauma in both at the same time. You want to check tissue for tooth fragments whenever you see soft tissue injury, because oftentimes, even though, like when you look at this picture slide, see a fracture up there, it's like an overfilling fracture. It looks like it's pretty much intact, just out of place. But oftentimes, the little bits and pieces can all embed in the lip or cheek. So you want to make sure you palpate that whenever you do examine it based on the field. The protocol for the soft tissue treatment is nothing earth-shattering. You just palpate the teeth to check the soft tissue for fragments, like I just said. You swab the area with hydrogen peroxide. Do the water. We don't recommend spray hydrogen peroxide, it's pretty caustic, but it's been proven over and over that the diluted hydrogen peroxide is very effective. You don't need to use spray hydrogen peroxide. Have the patient rinse for hexanine, because you keep the bottle down in your feet. Control bleeding with pressure for scars. Apply ice to the area and refer to the dentist as soon as possible. Here's some Paradex, which is the brand name of chlorhexidine. You might be familiar with it, you might not. Here's some Perio Bar, another brand name of chlorhexidine. Hydrogen peroxide, that's the best to hydrogen peroxide to die at any pharmacies, or whatever they call them. talk about two fractures now. There's a couple of different pictures depicting two fractures. One of them, obviously, the two fractures, the piece is still pretty much in place. The other one's missing. Of course, when you look for the missing tooth fracture, the one where it's missing, because we want that tooth fracture, we want to kind of use it. Not all of it, but we want to kind of use it. As a dentist, I'd rather say, well, you know, I'm glad you got it, but it's not going to work to make the brain, because probably half the time it will work again. Broken off a tooth fracture, the tooth is in pieces, say the broken portion of the brain's dental office in normal water. The nerve and the tooth may be exposed to the pain, cold, being there. Analgesics are recommended. Covering exposed area with a clean towel can also be helpful. The patient may complete the game or activity, but will completely be seen by dentists in 24 hours or sooner if possible. Here's an example of an exposed nerve. Just looks like a little red dot there on the inside of the tooth there. That's very, very painful for the patient in most cases. It's very, very vascular. It's very, very painful. The patient, but if you just put a towel or a gauze over that and invite them until they get to the dentist, that will often die. Keep the cold air from irritating. This is a young man who's played football at Lincoln Park. He came in with a tooth fracture. He sustained during practice. Trainer Sam Nyland, Sam brought him in. She brought the tooth fragment stored in a safe tissue storage medium. It's great. You know, here's the patient post-op release after we worked on it and prepared it. We did have to do a root canal with tooth, but we were able to save the tooth. And if you're looking at today, you're not, I don't think you know that it had a fractured tooth the day before or 2 days. Tooth fractures aren't always so obvious. Look at the top picture and look at this patient and say, oh, I can't see anything wrong. All of a sudden, you start poking around in there, and it separates. But you'll be able to kind of snap back into place, and it looks like there's nothing wrong. So, I'll just assume there's not a fracture. You look in there, and just look at them down there. You've got that curve. You've got that curve, or a tweet, or whatever. You poke around with it. Let's talk a little bit about the bulging, where the tooth is actually knocked completely out. You've got an example of the partial bulging on the left side, and on the right side, you've got a completed bulging. This young lady was a victim of, not during the game itself, but after the game, she was suffered by another young lady. I think it's the term, some young man, but anyway, you can see the orthodontic retainer wire on the inside of that tooth, that's one thing holding that tooth in her mouth, right? That you're able to, got the officer, you're able to replant the tooth. We've got a right-on splint there, as you can see, the white splint there. And of course, we did have to treat the tooth with a root canal independently. And you basically had to have a crown piece also. But the long-term prognosis is very favorable because the tooth never left the little cavity, even though it was bulging. Okay, the bulging. Basically, the treatment protocol is you want to reimplant the tooth in 5 to 10 minutes if possible, because that's just timing is really critical on this. For some reason, the PDN cells and all this really degenerate. They dry out, but your chances of long-term prognosis tests are greatly reduced. The root of the tooth has debris on it, rinse the root with water, never touch the root with the fingers themselves, but they crush the PDN cell and put it on the plate cells. And those are the cells that are critical for your attachment, so you never grab the tooth by the root itself, grab it by the coronal part of the tooth, part of the tooth you see on the mouth. The patient can hold that and then the patient can be developed under some water. It's an effort to place the other hand on top of the patient's head and then just physically kind of push the tooth back into place. It's not critical to be exactly in the right place. You just want it in there in a moist environment with the natural mouth and saliva and everything. To get into the tennis and the tennis can be positioned and get it all the way. And oftentimes you'll form a clot right quickly in there and you can't get it to go past that clot. So sometimes I'll have to go in and clear out the clot first and then push the tooth back up in place. And that's something she couldn't do, obviously. You basically control your bleeding, grab pressure for 20 minutes of gauze. You guys are far more able to bleed. There's an IM on the field, so no one is prepared to try to replant the tooth. basically into a storage medium like milk or saline, or ideally the storage medium such as saline. You probably don't have that yet. Now, if you don't know what it is, check the expiration date, so you can think that it will last a couple of years or whatever. But if you're not familiar with this, it's pretty cool. It's got a little acid in it. You're substituting some acid. You've got to go back into the jar and set the solution in. And it actually replenishes electrolytes while it's in there. So it's kind of helpful. I saw one study where a guy purposely left it in the state of the solution for 24 hours. And you got the thing even. He claimed it was because of the replenishment of the electrolytes. Here's an example of an impulsion that's not completely out. This was a soccer accident, if I recall. They caught it. Somebody was on a header or something, and they caught the battery in the header. So when you see something like that, what do you do? Well, if you sort of displace a motion like that, if you push off, it's not mobile at all. It's day to day. You're starting, you're really locked into the phone, you're not going to really do anything but press home, it's kind of pushing in the wrong direction. That's an indication there where you just get a knock to the dentist and let the dentist go ahead and take care of it. Control bleeding, the dogs are, you know, stinking out, but there's not a lot you can do in that particular case. We're putting the tooth back in place. Notice here where he's got a hold of the crown, put his finger in the sun, firmly with the proper elasticity, and then push his firmly into the socket and hold the tooth in place for 5 minutes. Relaxation where the tooth is just moved out of place and not knocked out. This is an example of luxation. There's another more mild example of luxation. It's just slightly pushed down in this particular case. It's extruded luxation. Here it goes with that one. Okay. Luxation is three conditions that you go into. It can be extruded, like the one that's just slightly extruded, we'll show you right before this slide. The upper tooth hangs down and the lower tooth is pushed up. Basically, you reposition the tooth and socket using firm finger pressure, just like rehabilitation. Stabilize the tooth by gently biting the jowl or the left tissue, transport immediately to the dentist. Lateral displacement, that was the other one I showed you where I said that no treatment is actually seen. If the tooth is blocked in the bone, you can't really do anything. Same with the intruded type of luxation where the tooth is pushed in. It's locked in bone, you can't really do anything other than get right to the dentist. This is a bad little arthrowire splint. You saw the other splint, but there's a white splint that was called right on the splint. But this is an arthrowire splint. We have different types of splints. Sometimes the splint would want the teeth still be active, so you would use a fishing line and put the splint on the fishing line so you've got some movement to the tooth, yet it's still in place so that you get better movement. Subluxation of the mandible. Probably won't see this very often, but I thought I'd mention it. You might have had it happen to yourself when you open too wide, or your jaw locks open, you can't close your jaw. And it's very much a panic situation for the patient, you better say, hey, you can't get my jaw open. Basically, the patient's jaw locks open, the patient has no apparent traumatic episode prior to being hit or anything, but they can't close their mouth. So, treatment consists of placing your thumbs on the inside of the patient's cheeks on each side, pressing on the inside bottom of the lower jaw, with the thumbs in the cheek, pressing downward and then backward until the head of the condyle slips back into place past the fossa, into the fossa. The head of the condyle. Here's the head of the condyle here, which you're familiar with, and here's the fossa. Well, if they open real wide, this will slip past this notch here and get stuck. So you just push down the back and just slip right back up in place. By the way, don't have your fingers on the body surface of your teeth to do this because it can lock right back in place and all the stuff got you. So if you're going to put your fingers on the body surface, grab a towel around your fingers to get in there and do it with that first. I would just like to go down inside the cheek and push yourself. Okay, what's your first observation here when you look at this man? Oh, it's not frozen teeth, Gary. It's not frozen teeth, or anything else. We're going to ask the patient if they feel like their teeth are fitting together normally when he or she bites. Does the lower jaw appear to open and close properly? And kick to one side of the Don't limit your evaluation to the teeth and what appears to be the most obvious problem. Blow to the chin is the most likely cause of a jaw fracture. Usually a face-on blow fracture. That's on the area there. The chin, lots of times you see fractures that's in the contact area. There's a mandibular fracture. This was a soccer accident also. Here's a maxillary jaw fracture. This was a baseball accident here. And so what would we do in this particular case? Like, if you reach in there, you can see that the teeth move, but they move together like the plate of bone, and you know that it's not just a matter of a luxated tooth right there, put it back up in the place. So you just set it down there and have a bite on some clean towel and give it to the dentist or the ulcer. The dentist will refer you, like I would refer to the surgeon, I'll see the patient with the ulcer. Here's an isolated fracture that resulted from a horse accident. This 16-year-old girl was on the horse track riding, and the horse bolted with her, hit a tree in. This resulted in injury of the tree that getting hurt. Let's talk a little bit about TMJ trauma. The patient's chief complaints are usually they got a blow to the jaw from the side of the face or to the chin. They have pain in the region of the ear, especially when opening and closing, and they tend to hear it at first. Restricted opening and closing, you ask the patient to have a history of pain prior to the incident. And sometimes you're trying to give the patient to if they actually had nothing to actually do with it. It might have aggravated the chronic condition, but it didn't have to cause it. Ask the patient to have a history of the they will know it. And have been familiar with the current TMJ and night guard and all that. Your basic protocol when you evaluate the injured player, check to see if the patient's conscious, alert, normal breathing, bleeding under control. You always want to control bleeding first off. Is it soft tissue injury? Is it hard tissue? Is it a combination? Is the missing tooth fragment, tooth found? Do they feel like the tooth is in a different position than prior to the incident? That would indicate palpation. Is there sensitivity? Is there a cold intensified? And I have so nerve, I told you. I ask the patient if their teeth feel like they fit together normally and bite it down. Observe the mandible to see if there's normal opening and closing movements. If the patient has pain in the region of the ear when opening or palpated, refer to their dentist as soon as possible. Let's talk a little bit about mouth guards just briefly to wrap up. You have two basic types which you are familiar with. You have a stock mouth guard, you have a mouth form, which is a low bite, and you have a custom fit. Custom fit is highly recommended by the Academy of Sports Surgery and myself. Two types of custom fit. You have a vacuum form, which pulls the material, the EVA material, down over the model. Then you have a heat pressure laminated type, which pushes the material down over the model. The heat pressure laminated type is by far the recommended type of the two, but they're both far superior to the mouth form or stock type. This is an example of a pressure laminating machine that I have in my office. It's made by Great Lakes with a BioStar. This is a mini star machine here. That's an example of the material there. You can see the sheet down, you can see that. But this is the box that comes in. But you can make a dual laminated, pressure laminated mouth guard with that type of machine. And here's your vacuum type machine. That piece right here. That's up. You put the turn on the heater and the material's put in here. You put that up just like you got the other types. Heat it up. You pull it down with the model. Put the model in there. That works great, but the pressure laminated, I'll show you in a second, is better. And right here is one second. Basically, the left one is a 1.4 millimeter sheet of EVA material pulled over the model. The material is thinned over the edges. I'm going to say that. Look right here, you see where it's thin. The HVL, heat pressure laminated type, you see, you take 2 millimeter sheet pushed over the model, then you take a second 2 millimeter sheet and laminate it over that, and look at the difference in the thickness. Well, obviously, there's a lot more protection here. So, this, both of these are 4 millimeters starting, but this is your end result as far as you're going to take that protection sheet. To get a more instant fit with the heat pressure laminated, also, you'll even pick up if you have a writing on the model. You'll even pick that up in the mouthpiece material itself, maybe pressure laminated. It's great for putting patients, lay your name, numbers in, put that in on one layer, and then laminate over the top of it, put the team logos, all that stuff. Okay, here's some tips for a better fitting mouth guard. Basically, score your impression within 30 minutes. The impression dries out and it distorts. Trim the model carefully, leaving plenty of thickness top to bottom. I'll show you a picture in a minute of that. Cut a hole in the middle of the palate of the model. Immerse the mouth guard in cold water while still on the model immediately after the cooling down time in the machine. Trim the mouth guard distal of the first molars. I'll show you that in just a second. Trim the upper margins of the mouth guard shorter, about 7 millimeters in the molar region and 4 in the incisor area. Actually, I do mine more like about, I do about 5 millimeters here and about 2 to 3 millimeters here. Tend the borders real well and trim the inside borders to about 1 to 2 millimeters. That's where the speech is affected the most. So if you can trim those inside borders, your quarterbacks and your point guards and that type of player for skilled positions, they need to communicate. So if they can communicate better, if you do that, they'll be more likely to wear the thing. Here's what I meant by it. The thickness is top to bottom, you want it nice and thick. Here's the top, here's the bottom. If you cut this, cut all this down to here, so then you don't have near the morphology to work with. Here's an example of a hole cut in the middle of the palate. When you're using the vacuum type machine, this really helps because it helps, remember, it's pulling it down. There'll be little holes in here that'll be pulling through there. Heat pressure laminated, it's helpful, but not as helpful. But heat pressure laminated fits it tightly anyway, but it doesn't really need it. This is an example of the inside borders where they should be on your mouthpiece. Note how close they are to the edges, to the toothpiece, the gum itself. Don't want more than 2 millimeters there. Once again, just talking about the thickness, top to bottom, are nice and thick here. Same deal there. That's about where your mouth guard borders should be. In the back area, this being your first molar, second bicuspid, first bicuspid, tested. You want to stop at the distal, instead of the distal, the first molar. That means this area right here. You don't want to take it all the way back to here. You know it looks nice and think it's more protected. So you've got plenty of protection back there from the macro muscles in the face. If you extend that mouth guard back to there, 9 out of 10 players will not wear the mouth guard. So keep your mouth open too wide. Bite down if it jacks them open and dries them out. Particularly your higher elite players that are professional, but small reason to get naked for. The recommended thickness for a mouthpiece, a mouth guard, is 3 millimeters. If you've got a boxer, obviously you want 7 millimeters. If you've got a skilled position player, you might have to go down to 2 millimeters. But it just depends on the particular player. Of course, what he wants, but 3 is what you recommend. There's the front area, just showing you where the borders should be. So you see a lot of people say, oh, put them way up here, they're so pretty. Yeah, that's pretty, but they're pushing up the inside of the vestibule there, they're not going to wear the thing. They don't wear it, it's not doing much good. So you have to temper idealism and realism. This is a pinch, this is a motor, a lab motor. Notice the little red burr here. This is for finishing down the mouth pieces. It looks great. These things cost about $300. The burr probably $5. If you can finish mouth pieces forever with that red burr right there, it's sitting down for a nice vision result for the patient. This is an electric knife. Pretty cool stuff. Instead of taking scissors and cutting the mouth guard off the model, you can take this heated up knife. Kind of like the old wood-burning carving type knife you use to carve your street sign and street knife on for your house. But it works great. It's very inexpensive too. You can take that thing right there, $100 or something like that. But you figure you're going to use it for years and years and years, it's not really that much. This is a painter's heat gun. You're using that pressure laminating machine, and you've got one layer on the model before you pull down the second layer, and you've got to heat it up with the heat gun, because if you don't, if the material's not warm, it won't adhere to the other material very well, and you'll have separation. Well, that's just a mouth mirror. I hope you all have mouth mirrors in your trainers' bags or on the field. They've been handy for a lot of things. Let's talk just for a second, and I'll wrap it up here, about the performance-enhancing mouth guards that you're hearing a lot about. Under Armour being the leader probably in that right now. I feel like it's definitely proof that mouth guards enhance performance. Each player is to a different degree, but basically the theory behind it is that cortisol is released when you press your teeth together. And if you wear a mouth guard, a proper fitting mouth guard, as they say, that will help keep you from hitting enamel against enamel. That striking enamel against enamel, when a player bites together without a mouthpiece, triggers the vagal nerve, which triggers the response, which results in the release of cortisol. Cortisol is a fight or flight hormone, and cortisol is a good thing if you're running from a tiger in the jungle for a few minutes. But it's a bad thing if it's for the whole game, it starts to wear you down after a while. You keep getting this release up, and time starts to break down instead of pumping it up. So basically, you can delay this release or prevent this release of cortisol if you wear a mouthpiece. There's been extensive studies at the Citadel, at Johns Hopkins University, and also at the University of South Carolina that show extensively that this does indeed. I mean, I'm just talking like maybe 5 to 10%, but that's 5 or 10% without taking a drug to do it, and that might mean the difference between winning or losing a ball game. So 5 to 10% should be taken away. If you want to know more about that, I've got some research back at my office, and I have articles that I can refer you to if you're reading more about it. I asked the people at Under Armour, I said, well, tell me this. I said, your mouthpiece that you make that has a supposed magic ramp in the back. I said, now, have you proven, are there any stats to prove that it works better than just our custom made mouthpieces we make in the dental office? I said, no, I can't say that. I've done research on that, but we just went with ours is great. So we'll pay $400 for the box of yours. I'd like to encourage you each to close to, if you don't have a team dentist that you work with, to get one. There's dentists in your neighborhood, there's players, there's faculty members, know people. I think it'd be great to get hooked up with a team dentist for your teams. You want basic things in your locker room to have ready for him if you need it, like the forehead steam, hydrogen peroxide, and that type of thing. So it'd just be good to really get a rapport with a team dentist. But legally, he has to take impressions for your mouthpiece. But you should encourage mouthpiece wear by the patient. Concussions, the controversy does or does not help concussions. I think it does. Basically, concussions, as you know, are a big deal in sports now. And they're not generally caused, as my understanding, by the blow to the area from the brain substance across to the other side of the skull, which is where the concussion area occurs. So if you can stabilize the sternal plural mouthpiece muscles, playing into a mouthpiece, that prevents some of that rotational movement. So I really do think that it helps. And I've seen more studies that say that it does, and say that it does, but yet there's nothing to do. There's controversy, no questions about that. I heard Larry the Cable Guy, when I was coming home from Austin Saturday night on a blue collar comedy channel, one of the big arguments we had, but he was talking about something at Walmart while he was going to get some hydrogen peroxide. He said, no, he said, well, Walmart's got so big, he said, this Walmart I go to has 2 dentists in it, 2 dentists. He said, one of them's a regular dentist, and one of them's an express dentist for people with 10 teeth or less. So I said, well, there you go. So I'm not an express dentist, but I am a regular dentist. Feel free to call me anytime. But I appreciate your time.
Actually, this is a sports medicine broadcast. So what typically I do is I'll bring speakers to my school and I'll talk to the students. And then the podcast is edited, published on the sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. And then that's used for athletic trainers to download anywhere to earn CEUs, any TA, BOC, CEUs. And so I've been doing this for about 3 years. And then it's really blossomed this last year since we met Dr. Yellen and Knobloch. And then obviously Bob Marley allowed us to come here today. And, you know, while all the experts are here, might as well just shuttle them in here for a few minutes. And so what we'll end up doing is taking the talk that you had in there and then put this on the end of it.
Okay.
So. Is that cool? All right, so I know one of the questions that somebody asked at the end there was about having a team dentist.
Right.
We had spoken with a dentist earlier this year, but I really want to know, because I honestly have no idea who to call if we have a dental emergency.
Right. Well, basically, there's a society called the Academy of Sports Dentistry. As a matter of fact, we're having an annual meeting in San Diego next week. We get together once a year and we compare notes. And not everybody at the meeting is a V-Day with a professional team or a college team. Most of them are V-Day with high school teams. Because there are a lot of high schools and there are colleges and professional teams. But they have a team dentist course that you literally take. And obviously they don't teach us how to do dentistry, but they just teach us the protocols. Things as simple as how to set up physicals for when you do physicals, how to set it up for the training room, and taking impressions for mouthpieces, doing screenings, that type thing. And, but the Academy of Sports Dentistry has a list of, I think there are now about half a dozen people in the area of Houston that are members of the Academy. I was surprised at first, but there are about half a dozen people or so now, maybe more. And I'll find that out next week.
That's
great. They're actually members of the Academy and are training, are taking the team dentist course.
Yeah, so
you do not have to take a team dentist course to be a team dentist.
Okay.
You just basically have to be a dentist. Most dentists are those who are really well with traumatic injuries and handle them. Unfortunately, most of them have not seen them since dental school because they don't work in that type of an area. I've been blessed and I worked in an area where I've seen traumatic injuries all the time, be it on the professional or college or high school level. I see more from the college level than I do from the professional level.
Oh, really?
It seems like the coaches from college, the kids mix it up more. I'm college level with HBU. I think I see more busted up mouths from his practices than anybody's, because he's got kids diving for these balls and they're really into it. So
I graduated from HBU in 2004.
Did you?
Yeah.
Well, it's the college athlete versus professional athlete are just night and day as far as their attitudes and all. And I love the professional athletes. I'm not saying that professional athletes are bad. Professional athletes have hit the higher echelon. And they know it, and sometimes I think that they're pacing themselves and saving their bodies because it's money to them as opposed to just make the team want to start and get missed in the game, that type of thing.
All right, so you said, repeat that again, the American Academy of Dentistry?
It's Academy of Sports Dentistry.
Academy of Sports Dentistry,
right.
So that'd be the first place to look.
Right.
And then
they have a website, you can go on the website, see who's in the Houston area. And go from there.
Okay. And then if, you know, maybe if they can't come up to be ours, then maybe they can recommend somebody in our area or something like
right.
that.
Right.
So.
But like I said, if you don't have any there, just check with the local dentist in the area. A local dentist should jump at the chance to be a team dentist because it's a potential for referrals.
Right.
And, you know, people say, oh, he just doesn't take new patients with, 60 years old and still taking the patients, and that's where you make an income because you get all the others fixed. Mm-hmm.
I guess so.
So anybody says they don't take new patients, it's either they're trying to wind down and not practice anymore, or they're not telling the truth.
Yeah.
Maybe they just want to be discriminatory against somebody or something.
Yeah. Okay. Did you have any other questions about fitness? We're trying to keep it short and you got to get back to work or something.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you. As far as dentistry goes, there's still a lot of areas I get frustrated with that we have not made advances like I feel like we should have as a profession, but we have made tremendous advances over even the last 10 years. And dentistry, as a result, is becoming more fun again because I'm getting new procedures that I'm constantly getting updated on. New equipment, that type of thing, and it's made things fun again for me as a dentist. But the important thing is for these young guys coming out that they never feel like they're there, feel like they always got to learn. When you quit learning, something's wrong, because they're always coming out with new things. We haven't had a lot of advances in the, like I said, in the lecture, in the on the field, in the locker room, protocols, but and most of the stuff, you guys' hands are tied by the State Board of Dental Examiners because they're only allowed dentists to do it, such as taking an impression, but not these, you know, I know guys who do, and, you know, I wouldn't turn them in or anything, but if they get caught, it's a very serious matter with the State Board of Dental Examiners, and they come at you, whether you be a layperson, they don't just go to the dentist, I mean, they can actually have charges filed against a person who practicing without a license and that type of thing. So you don't want to get caught in that situation. So now, as the rule reads, the dentist does not physically necessarily have to be on site. He has to be very quickly available in cases of emergency, because something as simple as taking an impression sounds very simple on the surface, but if they swallow some impression material and choked, you know, what would you do? Would you know how? Basically sleepy heart disease place there, but yeah, the type of thing is you don't want to get them in that situation. You don't want to, there's a certain way to load an impression tray when you're taking impression. If you overload it, half of it goes down the throat and that's when you choke. So just little things like that, that you want to have a team dentist available. And a referral source, they should jump out, especially a young guy. And the young guys, you know, even though they haven't been around and learned through the School of Knox, they might have had some different training in school because they just came out. You know, I graduated from school 35 years ago. And these young guys who graduated 5 years ago, hopefully they're teaching them newer techniques.
Right.
And they taught me that I had to go out and learn my own.
Okay. All right. Well, that's Dr. O'Brien, the team physician or team dentist for pretty much everybody who's famous in Houston.
I've been blessed. You know, getting the job is, you know, you have to have a strength of love to get the job. Keeping the job is hard work. And that's where people say, well, how did you become a team dentist for the Rockets? You know, I bore you with it, but I basically, someone referred one of the players' wives to me. She came to me, I did some cosmetic work. She liked it. She sent her husband in. He sent other players. Next thing I'm a team dentist. But that's where it all started. And then from there, that was in 1984. And so we've had a complete change over medical staff, what, two times or three times at the Rockets? Three times.
We had
Baker leave, Walt come, Walt leave, Tex Arpeaux come, then Walt back.
Walt back. Walt never moved back.
Yeah, that's right. So, but they kept me. I'm independent from them.
Mm-hmm.
And I was blessed, and the trainers liked me, and they kept me. So you have to be available, and that's what some guys might not like. Is, you know, many times I've had to go into the office, you know, meet somebody from a sporting event or something, when I'd rather be at home with my wife or whatever, or have to leave a game, go back to the office with a player. And with the Rockets, I've had it happen numerous times. I'd go back to the office with a player. Get out of there one morning, go back to see patients the next morning,
or drive a Porsche.
But keeping the job is what's, you gotta be doing something right to keep the job. The Texans have been with me since they started, 9 years and 10 for about, probably 7 years earlier. U of H, so you take 5 years now, been with HBU since 90. When they start basketball back again. You were there, weren't you, when I started here?
Well, I was back in 82.
Oh, no, it wasn't then. It must have been up around 9. We had the BCI league there.
Right, that's right.
And that's where I met Ron. And
we struck up the friendship.
Okay.
All right, well, thank you, Dr. Brett.
Thank you very much for your time.